Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Altus State and Local Tax and Advisory Podcast Series. Once again, we're joined by Fernando Calvo, who's a key accounts executive at Altus Group's Atlanta office, who will be interviewing Ross Litkenhouse, who's a senior director at Altus Group's Tysons office, about real property tax appeals, deadlines, and processes in the state of Virginia. And with that, I'll hand it over to Fernando.
Thank you so much. Ross, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Fernando. Matt, thank you for the intro, as always.
Sure.
Perfect. Well, Ross, this is the first quarter of every year. Mid-Atlantic region has several property tax deadlines. Last month, we had a podcast discussing specifically details regarding Maryland. This week, we're talking about Virginia, and then next week we're talking about D.C. With all these appeal deadlines so close together, can you give us a high-level overview of how these markets are different and then speak specifically about Virginia's March deadline?
Yeah, it's important for our listeners to know that in Virginia, each county can have a varying deadline at the first level. So they're constantly rolling. They're crammed together in a very short time frame. Assessments are being issued now through, you know, the next 30 days, and you've got, I mean, deadlines all over the place. You know, Fairfax County, which is a big one, is April 1st. Alexandria, Arlington are in March. You know, you've got some of the Southern Virginia jurisdictions, which are a little bit later. So it really is all across the board. So for those folks that have portfolios throughout Virginia, you're not really looking at one specific deadline like you would in D.C. or in the entire state of Maryland. So it's very important for folks to stay on top of those deadlines. And I'll tell you, the big difference here between D.C., Maryland, and Virginia is that in Virginia, when you're appealing, most of the time you need to have your case built before you actually appeal. You need to have that evidence put together, your valuations, your assumptions, your arguments formulated, then you submit that, versus D.C. and Maryland, where generally speaking, if you've got a position, and of course you typically don't want to appeal if you don't, but if you've got a position, you can file the appeal, and then you can build your case afterwards in terms of evidence and all of the attachments that go with it. So it can be a very onerous process in Virginia. So it's very, very important for folks to pay attention to those deadlines and get as far out in advance as possible.
So, question for you. You mentioned that you have to submit evidence. Does that evidence is that due on the deadline, or when do they actually have to submit that, 2 weeks prior to the deadline? Is there a specific
timeline? That's at the time of appeal. So when you submit your evidence or when you submit your appeal, the evidence needs to go along with it. So you are building a full case. And in some cases for us, you know, when you talk about building a successful case, I mean, sometimes we're talking about 30, 40, 50 pages worth of evidence. You've got a narrative, you've got your valuation, you may have an appraisal, you have site inspection, you've got rent rolls, you have income and expense statements, you know, and you've got all the arguments that are built qualitatively as a result of that quantitative material. So, I mean, it can be very, very cumbersome. And I will tell you, having done this over the last, you know, 12 or 13 years, it seems like those deadlines from the time the valuations and the assessments are issued until when you actually have to appeal, it seems like those time frames are getting shorter and shorter. So if you want to build a successful case and give yourself the best shot at getting reduction at the first level, you're putting a whole heck of a lot of work in there at the very beginning. Once you get the assessment, you've reviewed it, you've evaluated it, you've determined that there's a position, then you need to support it. So when you're filing that appeal, Fernando, you are sending in all of that information and evidence along with it at the same time.
Is there any benefit of waiting to the very last minute to support to submit your appeal, or does it make sense to submit it a little earlier?
No, I mean, you obviously want to try to get it in as soon as possible. I will tell you, though, I can't say necessarily in particular jurisdictions if in terms of where you're put in line, in terms of priority, where you might fall. I mean, a lot of those things are happening kind of behind the curtain at the jurisdictions when they may be prioritizing based on asset type, you know, what assessor is going to be reviewing what properties and what area of that jurisdiction. But generally speaking, as with all things, you want to get in there as soon as possible. But again, it's a very, very short time frame, very short turnaround period. So sometimes you are working up until the last minute because, again, you're going out and you are trying to value a property and put together all the evidence to support it. Could be sales comps, could be income approach to valuation, could be a cost approach to valuation. And those things take time. And, you know, if you've got the right experts, you can move through it a little quicker. But if you've got property owners who may be pursuing these things on their own, that can be a very cumbersome process while you're trying to run your real estate, trying to manage the real estate.
Got it. Now, not to be too redundant, but this is a very important message with regard to timing. So, you know, tell us a little bit more about the timing of the appeals and why Virginia is perhaps more demanding in terms of the appeal process.
Yeah, I mean, I touched on it a little bit in terms of, you know, the turnaround time. But another important thing to note is that in Virginia, you've got a first-level appeal deadline, and you have a second-level appeal deadline. And in a lot of jurisdictions, you could skip that first level potentially and go directly to the second level. However, I never advise that. Even though it is a quick turnaround at that first level, in 99% of the cases, when you're appealing really anywhere in the country, and you could be having this discussion outside of the Mid-Atlantic and certainly outside of Virginia, you know, you want to be negotiating with the individual or be talking to the individual that was predominantly responsible for putting that assessment on the books to begin with. So by skipping that opportunity and going directly to the board at that later deadline, which may be, you know, sometime in June or July, you're really doing yourself a disservice, because if you skip that, it ultimately becomes a contentious kind of atmosphere where you'll end up in front of a board where you've never really had any discussions with the assessor. Maybe you reached out beforehand, but let's just say you haven't really had any substantive discussions with the assessor. And then it's you fighting the assessor in front of a third party, which, you know, boards can be appointed, they can be assigned, you know, they can be, in some cases, prior, you know, employees of the state. It really depends on how the board mix up, but essentially it's you versus the assessor in a very contentious atmosphere presenting to a third party, which is very different, as you know, from sitting down with another individual trying to come to a meeting of the mind and saying, here's everything that I know about this property. Let me educate you. You can educate me on how you came to that assessment. And we can try to work something out. So even though it's a tight turnaround, and even though you might be advised or someone might be telling you, you know what, let's just go, we'll wait until the second level to give us more time to build our case. My experience has always been that if you really want to mitigate, you know, you know, your tax liability, if you really want to focus on getting the most bang for your buck and getting relief, you know, as soon as possible, you really need to try to stay in front and ahead of that first level deadline so you can talk to the folks that know the most about the property and give yourself the best chance at a successful negotiation.
Yeah, so you've spoken a lot about evidence and submitting it early. Talk to us a little bit about the information request forms our owners are receiving from the various counties. Are these important to fill out? And if so, you know, what information should we provide? And what happens if we don't actually provide the information that's submitted to the counties?
That's a good question as well, because there's somewhat of a difference of opinion in how people deal with those income and expense requests. And as in most jurisdictions, especially in the Mid-Atlantic, in Virginia and a lot of counties, and of course, you're talking about a large number of jurisdictions throughout the state of Virginia, so they can be slightly different, you know, jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But generally speaking, you know, you'll get a request for information prior to every assessment. So, you know, those requests usually come around the springtime when your appeal deadlines for the current year are due. And they're going to be asking you about year-end information from the year prior. So let's say your assessment was just issued in 1/1/16 or for a 1/1/16 valuation. Right around that time that you would be appealing that, which is right around now, you know, or over the next 30, 60 days, they're going to be requesting income expense information, a survey be filled out to tell them how your property performed as of year-end 2015. So they use that not only for the basis of valuation the following year, meaning for 2017, but they also use it in reviewing the assessment for a potential appeal this year. So if you're going in and you're fighting your 1/1/16 valuation, most of the time, 99% of the time, I mean, the only information they're going to have that is complete for year-end that they would have had at their disposal, the jurisdiction would have had at their disposal to develop that 1/1/16 valuation, would have been based on year-end 2014 income and expense information, because obviously they're working on developing those assessments before you really close the books on year-end 15. So let's say you disagree with the 1/1/16 valuation. You go in and you appeal it. Let's say it's an April 1st deadline. Right around that same time, that jurisdiction is going to want, I'll use Fairfax County as an example, you know, they're going to want an income and expense questionnaire that shows you year-end 2015, which for the purposes of valuation, year-end 2015 operations are going to give you the best idea of what the property should be valued at as of 1/1/16 because it's the most relevant. So they may have only had year-end 2014 information putting together that assessment, but now as you're appealing, you're providing year-end 2015. So as part of that review process, they're going to want to see that information. So if you choose not to give that to them, when you're asking them for a reduction of 1/1/16, that's going to make it a pretty tough hill to climb in terms of convincing them that they've missed the mark. On the flip side of that, Virginia used to have a law that could potentially preclude you from appealing based on the income approach if you didn't provide it. However, that's changed, and it's now a requirement that if you want to appeal an income-producing property, once you get through those levels of appeal, you're going to have to provide that income and expense information. So the question of if it's important, yes, it's important. It's hard to argue a value on an income-producing property if you don't show them income and expense information. And two, it kind of makes it look like you're hiding something. And for those folks out there who really don't want to, they want to mitigate the risk of what I would call an increase in assessment that really isn't warranted the following year, by providing that information, you get a little more certainty. And I know we've talked about this in past podcasts, but a lot of folks, you know, they want to pay only their fair share in taxes, but in a lot of cases, they just want to be prepared and know what they're staring down the barrel of, and they want to make sure that it's being valued according to, you know, what would be indicative of market value for most properties. So by providing that information to the jurisdiction and taking the guesswork out of the operations of the property, you're really setting yourself up for a better chance for the jurisdiction to get the valuation right the following year. So it's, here's all the information, here's everything you need to know. And then at that point, maybe instead of being 20% overvalued, maybe they get a little bit closer and you feel like you're only 5% overvalued. So you've mitigated some of that, again, guesswork and some of that, what I would call kind of an inappropriate assessment increase based on the operations.
Got it. So if I understand correctly, the counties are actually going to utilize the information that we submit to them to derive the fair market value.
That's right.
All right, so if that's the case, you know, what happens or what multiple or capitalization rate is the county going to use to generate that value?
Oh, man, you have asked the $64,000 question. I mean, really the million-dollar question. Cap rates in Virginia, that is certainly one of the most contentious aspects of the assessment and the appeals process. A lot of jurisdictions, and this is really Virginia in general, they're looking at uniformity and equalization. So they're going out and they're pulling information from the market. They pull information from these income and expense surveys that we talked about that were provided. And they also go out and look at sales to derive capitalization rates. And then they put these into guidelines. And so they go out and say, okay, for, let's just say, all Class A office properties, we know that rents are being achieved, you know, in this range from A to B. Expenses per square foot kind of fall within this range. And then based on sales, we've got capitalization rates that kind of fall within this range. And in certain counties, for those guideline purposes, they will adjust that capitalization rate sometimes by 10 basis points one way or the other. Sometimes it's just 1 or 2 basis points based on, you know, age could be one factor. So let's say it's a 6% cap rate for all Class A office properties, you know, constructed in 2014. If it was built in 2013, maybe it's 6.1%, and then it ratchets higher as you get into the older properties, and then the other way for any newer properties. So it's kind of like doing surgery with a machete as opposed to a scalpel. They're not really looking at the specific operations of the property when they're putting these assessments together. It's really done on this kind of mass appraisal approach, and it's to equalize the property. So they put together, you know, these guidelines in order to develop these assessments. So when it comes to capitalization rates, you know, that's kind of the big black box in terms of that one piece of their valuation that raises, you know, the most questions. My experience has been in Virginia, that when you argue capitalization rate, you're really arguing within the guidelines. So you're saying you classified me incorrectly. My property's it's a little bit older than what you guys think, so I should use a higher cap rate. If you go in and you're arguing capitalization rate in Virginia, 9 times out of 10, you're going to end up on the short end of the stick because it's such a subjective number in terms of – or subjective a rate and ratio that people are pulling from the market, that it can be very difficult to convince a jurisdiction, an assessor, a board, and even a judge sometimes that, you know, the rate that you are pulling from market is compelling enough because of that higher burden of proof that you have to overcome in Virginia is compelling enough to have them increase that cap rate. Versus what the jurisdiction pulled from their own surveys. So that is by far one of the most contentious pieces of the argument. You can argue expenses and rents and income and concessions and things like that in a much more specific way. But that capitalization rate, that's usually the higher hurdle to overcome in terms of assessment appeals.
Now, question for you, because you and I are on a national basis, we're chasing and representing clients everywhere, and we're seeing just crazy prices getting paid for some of these assets. I mean, especially, I truly believe they're overpaying for assets. Now, what happens when you have a recent sales comp, the county pulls it, and that recent sales comp creates a new high watermark? How do you overcome that objection?
Well, hopefully it's not your property that created that high watermark. Otherwise, you get yourself in a little bit of trouble. Because usually when a property trades, most jurisdictions are going to say, well, that's the best indication of value. And I will tell you, we spend a lot of time arguing that, you know, some clients paid higher than what other people would in the market for various reasons. And it could be the way that the acquisition was financed. It could be the type of company, REIT versus non-REIT. It could be portfolio purchase, and then it was an allocated price to that particular asset versus a single asset purchase. It could be that a particular company wanted to monopolize a certain submarket. There are all sorts of reasons why someone might pay more than other folks out there. And it could be foreign money coming in, where you know the attraction of the currency and just making a move to get a strong foothold in a certain market, they're willing to pay whatever they need to pay to buy that property. And you saw that in D.C. several years ago where there were some very, very high sale prices that really led the jurisdiction to chase some aggressive prices. And we've seen that in various jurisdictions throughout Virginia. So you're constantly battling that. And you spend sometimes just as much time discrediting certain purchases as the outliers, so they're not relied upon too much for the purposes of an assessment or evaluation as you would building your own case. So, you know, you're looking at all the facts that go into it, which is why we're always requesting jurisdictions work papers. We're always requesting their guidelines so we can get inside their heads, figure out what kind of information they were using to support their assessments, and then you're picking that apart. And you're building your case, but at the same time, you're picking that apart to show why maybe that high watermark purchase shouldn't be chased, at least the terms of it, cap rate, per square foot, per unit, per key, whatever it is, why they shouldn't chase that as an indication of market or what would be typical in a market transaction.
That makes total sense. Now, in your experience, what does your gut say about specific asset classes that you anticipate are going to have the highest increase in value this season?
That's a great question, Fernando. You know, it seems that every year we are evaluating multifamily, expecting for that market in general to take a turn for the worse. And it's to some degree thinking that jurisdictions are going to recognize that, but multifamily transactions continue to defy odds, and people continue to throw them up or build them here in record numbers. So there's still a tremendous amount of pressure on multifamily properties that are seeing huge increases not only in sale price but also in terms of assessments. And I will tell, you know, for the listeners out there, generally speaking, and I'd mentioned the timing of income and expense information that's provided to the jurisdiction and how they use that to develop values. Generally speaking, because of that lag in information and the fact that most jurisdictions are just overworked and most of the assessors are overworked, you know, they just got way too much on their plate. They're valuing, you know, thousands upon thousands of properties. And so they don't have nearly as much time to dig into the specifics. So there's usually a lag in terms of what happens in the market and what you see in the actual assessment. So if the market has already started to turn downwards, you can and say it was leading up to this most recent assessment in a particular asset class, it's probably not going to be recognized in your assessment. They'll still be looking at that market really from a year prior. So, you know, with that being said, you look back a year ago, multifamily was still the darling of commercial real estate. So I expect for those assessments to continue to increase. Here in Northern Virginia, there's been a lot of pressure on the office markets, and there's still some very high vacancy rates. So I expect for those to be somewhat tempered. And then retail has been very, very strong. So I think retail properties are going to continue to be hammered, you know, from a tax assessment standpoint. We don't have quite as much industrial around here, at least, you know, when you're talking about core DC. Not a tremendous amount of industrial, so that'll be kind of touch and go. But retail and multifamily seem to be, you know, they're coming out strong, so I would expect for those to continue to see some marked increases.
All right. So we're coming up on our time right now. So in addition to making sure clients only pay their fair share, what's another true benefit of engaging a tax consultant like yourself or another?
I think, honestly, it goes back to that idea of guidance and clarity in understanding what's going to happen to your property. I mean, you'll always have the chance to appeal in a reactive manner if you disagree with your assessment, and we're very, very good at doing that through all levels of the appeal process and into court, and even on the appraisal side. So we're very good at that, and that can always be done. I mean, that is always a medium for relief. But where I think that, you know, what separates good consultants from bad consultants and what I think the industry really needs and where we have seen a tremendous uptick in interest in our services and our industry in general on you know, the tax consulting side really comes down to budgeting and projections and helping folks come to terms with what they can expect. Because if you can plan around it, even if you disagree, but if you can plan around it, that puts you in a much better position in terms of managing your assets, managing cash flow, you know, and how that's going to affect your tenants. It gives you much, much more comfort going into a new fiscal year, at least feeling good that you've accurately projected where your taxes are going to go. So that's a huge benefit. And as a lot of our, you know, folks listening may or may not know, you know, we have a tremendous amount of real estate data internally, either through the work that we do for the federal government, all the data that we collect on their buildings through our RVA group, and then through, you know, the billions and billions of dollars worth of real estate that we manage from a property tax standpoint. We have a lot of good information that we can slice and dice and drill down and explain to our clients that you may not agree with this, but this is where we see it going. Plan accordingly. Once the assessments are issued, we will, you know, we'll go after those. We'll go after those aggressively, and we'll reduce those taxes. But at the very least, let me help you navigate what's a pretty treacherous landscape, avoid landmines, budget appropriately so you guys aren't caught off guard, and so you don't miss the mark in terms of returns at your property. And then again, we will go after and mitigate those taxes if they're issued at a level that we feel is unfair. So I think that's really where we're seeing the most interest and where we're seeing, a tremendous increase in interest based on what we provide to the real estate industry.
Well, Ross, I truly appreciate your time today. It's always informative. Look forward to our call next week on DC specifically. And to our listeners, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Fernando.
Perfect. And for all of our listeners out there, you just heard an exclusive Altus State and Local Tax and Advisory podcast interview where once again Fernando Calvo from Altus Group's Atlanta office interviewed Ross Litkenhaus, who's the senior director at Altus Group's Tyson's office, about real property tax appeals, deadlines, and processes in Virginia. And Ross and Fernando, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.